Idly hey.
Welcome to another episode of The Brett Allen Show.
Prepare to be astonished.
A pop culture podcast. Join Brett weekly as he interviews your favorite celebrities from film, television,
I'm back in business, baby!
Comedy, and much more.
Inconceivable!
Plus, you never know who will stop by.
Dude, we are so gonna party!
Now, here is your host, Brett Allen.
It's another episode of The Brett Allen Show, a pop culture podcast where we talk to your favorite actors from film, television, music, comedy, and more. Wherever pop culture is, you will find us there. And we just love talking to amazing people on the show. And today, our guest will certainly not disappoint. I've been looking forward to this conversation. We are talking with actor William Sadler, who I was going through his body of work. It's unbelievable how much he has done and been a part of over the years as far as contributing to the entertainment industry. And we're definitely happy to have him. Bill, welcome into the show. It's good to have you.
It's good to be here. Brett, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a beautiful day here. We've got a break in the rain here in the Bay Area, so we've got some sunshine today, so it's a perfect day to have a good conversation. Are you still in the LA area? Where are you located at specifically?
No, I'm on the East Coast now.
Okay.
Kind of permanently. I moved back here. Well, we bought a farmhouse back in the 80s and a little bit of land upstate near Millbrook, New York.
Okay.
And this tumble-down, beat-up farmhouse. And then we moved... almost immediately moved to Los Angeles, did a lot of movies, and then decided it was time to come back and live in the farmhouse and see if I could do it from here. And it seems I can. So I like living here anyway. I grew up in Buffalo. So I like the seasons.
Yeah, it's nice to have normal seasons, I guess you could say, whatever normal is these days as far as that. But it's interesting because a lot of actors like yourself who have been in the business for quite some time, who lived in LA and spent all of that time there and then eventually moved back to other places like the East Coast. There's a lot of actors that do that.
Right.
Because it seems like even I think maybe this last year and a half kind of pushed the industry in the direction to do a lot of these auditions and self-tapes from afar. So, I mean, it can be done quite easily, I'm guessing, because you're doing it. So all you have to do is do that and then travel to where you're going to.
You can put yourself on tape so easily these days. And I've been doing that for years now here, sort of self-tape, meetings for jobs or auditioning for jobs and what have you. It's also just, I think in the beginning, when I was just starting out in Los Angeles, it was maybe more important to be there, to really be there, because you'd get an appointment. They'd say, can you come in and meet the director, in a half hour? And it's so busy trying to get something going, running around Los Angeles, that I'm not sure you could do that from afar. If you're just starting out, if you're in a position like I am, where people kind of call,
okay,
and, once in a while with job, job opportunities or something they want me to read, that can be done anywhere in the country. And then you're right, if it works out and you get the job and what have you, you get on a plane.
Well, that brings me to an interesting question because you just kind of alluded to it. Again, starting out, I remember it, as a sidebar here, talking to some people during the actual pandemic, D.B. Sweeney actually said, if I were starting out in the business today during these crazy times, I think I would probably pack up my car and go back home because it's just so challenging.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was just talking about the last year or maybe just now, given his extensive experience. But it sounds like and please correct me if I'm wrong, it's mostly for you these days because of where you're at. People are reaching out to you to work, right? Yeah. They're sending you scripts and saying, hey, we would love William to be in this or that. And then there may be a little bit of time where you're actually going out to an actual audition physically.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, most of I every once in a while, young actors will ask me, you know, how do you get an agent? How do you, you know, how do you get your foot in the door? How do you get started? Because it's such a catch-22 in the beginning. You know, you can't get anybody to represent you unless you're in something, and you can't get into something in a decent role unless somebody an agent sends you up for it.
Yeah.
And it goes, and people wrestle with that for years, on both coasts, by the way. But but once you're, I never know what to say to them if they ask how to do it today, because I think the landscape has just changed so much. The business has changed so much. When I started, I had an answering service when I finally got to New York after all of the college and whatever, you know, and I was in the non-equity ensemble, Joe Papp's production of Henry V in the Park, you know, Spear Carrier number 17.
I love it. Yeah.
But it was such a long time ago. I found, you know, me and another guy found an apartment in the East Village for $150.
Wow.
So it's a different time. It's, you know, and then I did, after that, I was there, you know, I was all of a sudden I was living in New York. That scared the crap out of me. But I started doing off Broadway shows, I started doing plays that don't pay anything. Just as many as I could. And I did, it seems like dozens and dozens of these things. And then better paying gigs, and then regional theater. But I found an agent by going around and knocking on doors. And they would say, well, when you're in something, give me a call and I'll come and see it. Which is what I did. And one of these little off Broadway shows was a Brendan Behan play called The Bally Gone Behan Bequests. And I had a terrific, terrific, funny role in it. And I called the Gage Group, Marilyn Zatmary at the Gage Group, and said, I'm in this play, you know, if you'd like to come and see it. And she came, she said, I said, you remember me? I was the gay monk who carried the bench in, you know, Henry V. But she came, and we were doing it in the basement of St. Clement's Church, for nothing. It was just, you know, one of those off Broadway things. She came backstage afterwards and said, I want to represent you. And I was so green. I didn't know what she meant by that. But she said, come by the office on Monday and let's talk. And I had an agent, you know, that's how I got mine. But I just haven't got a clue how someone would go about it today in the digital world.
Yeah. It's interesting. Again, you are not the first to have said that, because it's different. It's like, I was talking to somebody, I can't remember who, and they even said, I don't even know how to answer that question. Like, I can't even tell you, because, you know, and although we are not that far apart, he told this person, it's so different now, you know, coming up in the 80s comedy boom and getting discovered and then going through the process like everybody else, maybe looking at the trades that came out daily, then had the auditions in the back, you know, that said, okay, we're looking for this kind of person and we're looking for that kind of person. But even going further back, for when you began, like, you were literally, I like the answering service thing, literally knocking on doors to get people to notice you. And then eventually you get a few credits, and then it's like, okay, now Bill Sadler is starting to progress in his career and sort of get somewhere. as far as like what you would consider to be measurable success at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like as far as being a certified actor where you're getting paid to do this as a living, you know, right. Even though you might be working maybe a few different jobs on at the same time, you're working actor. And that's sort of what's pushing you to keep moving, I would imagine.
Like, you know, about the other actor that you mentioned, Sweeney, that said, I would get in my car and go home if I knew how. I think I had no idea how difficult it was going to be or how long it was going to take, but I didn't, and I didn't set myself any limit either. I didn't say, you know, if I'm not working as an actor in within 2 years, I'm going to, you know, go be a dentist or something. It never even crossed my mind that it wouldn't occur. I had no plan B.
It was just kind of like you were going for it. You knew this was what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And you were willing to, risk was involved, you were just like, here we go.
I was also relatively successful at getting these jobs, you know, in the competing for different roles and things in the theater starting out. I was getting cast and then doing work that people thought was good. And I won an Obie Award for one off-Broadway performance, the Villager Award. And, you know, it was, I was sort of accumulating momentum, as well as I've always thought of it as like a pond. You keep dropping pebbles into the water and the more people see you and more people see you and more people see you. And you ever, after a while, you sort of become inevitable. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. Like
at some
point,
it's like the theory of the hundredth monkey, you know.
Yeah.
That one day, your name is just, you know, everybody seems to know it.
It's in the mouths of the people that it needs to be in the mouths of, because you've worked the way that the system is to be worked, as far as like auditioning and getting the no's, but yet still continuing on in the process and not giving up. And I think you said something interesting about not setting a timeline on yourself to make it happen either, because I don't think you can really do that, because this industry that you're a part of, I don't think works that way. Like it just, I don't know. I was reading an article about the percentage of people that come to Hollywood on a regular basis, LA, and then the actual percentage of people that actually stay, you know, is even smaller than the ones that like travel out to LA or New York, even to try and to make it, so to speak, in the business, you know, because it's so different than what I think most people would realize as an industry.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like today in colleges that teach act, you know, if you take acting classes in college, there were no classes on what to do once you hit the streets. There were no classes at the time when I was doing it. I never saw a class on what's a good headshot, what's things you're going to need, a headshot, a resume, what's a resume look like, how do you audition, is there a protocol that you need to follow, you know. And there was a lot of learning on the, you know, you learn from others and you get advice from older actors. I was constantly asking older actors you know, questions about the business. And that's, you know, it's like an apprenticeship. You know, and then one day you're the older actor and you've been doing it long enough that people ask you for advice.
Yeah, now you're on the opposite side of that. But again, because you've done a lot and have come so far in all of it, there's really, I would say, a disconnect, because it seems a lot of stuff is social media driven. Yeah. At least a lot of the pitches that I get for my show, it's like their social media is this and that. And I think it's great for that person who has achieved all that, but that's not going to really drive anything on my end necessarily. To make a decision, because it's like, I could tell you, it doesn't really make an effect on the reach that I have or the people that listen to my show, or what I take into consideration when I'm trying to find somebody to talk to. Unless it's someone like yourself who is seasoned and is just really been a part of a lot, you know. And I say that honestly because it's like, again, just going through everything, you made it work, basically. Whatever it took, you made it work. It's panned itself out, you know, clearly for you, I would say, in the types of roles that you've had in your career so far.
It seems to have. And I get more interesting roles now. I just did a movie with Karen Allen called A Stage of Twilight. That's this beautiful little indie. We shot it in New Milford, Connecticut, and it's this sort of love story between a man and a woman who've been married 42 years. And like I say, it's a love story. They're wrestling with some end of life issues. And it was fascinating for me because I don't get a chance to play that very often. I get asked to play, you know, killers and evildoers. I did, you know, and this movie had no zombies in it. I didn't have to shoot anyone. It was just this beautifully written picture of a simple life, you know, and some very real issues, some very real dramas that they had to work their way through. So it's called The Stage of Twilight. It's going to go to festivals, I'm sure.
Okay.
So if your audience wants to watch for it, Karen Allen is extraordinary. She's just, I've seen the film now, and she's just, I just thought she was flawless. It's one of those, you know, I was standing on the, you know, watching her on, when you're shooting is one thing, but then you see her on screen and you say, ah, that's what, look at that. The camera just adores her face, and she apparently can't make a false move.
That sounds exciting to check out. So when you get these offers, you know, we joke a little bit about no zombies, you're not a prisoner, you know, or like the Green Mile or whatever the case might be.
Right.
But when you're doing, you know, at this stage of the game for you, what are you looking for as an actor what lights your fire and makes you go, this is something that I want to, commit my time to, and really do it, you know, and make it something special like this film that you're mentioning.
I guess what I look for when I read a script is I read the scenes that I did in the Highwaymen, which is a television movie with Kevin Costner and Woody.
Great movie, by the way, on Netflix. Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it is. They're wonderful in it. But I read that little scene as Clyde Barrow's father. And the moment I read it, I was filled to overflowing with emotion. It just like filled me up. It was so clear he's going to ask this FBI guy, I know how this is going to end. Just please do it fast. You know, that's sort of basically what the scene was like. But, I look for scenes and dialogue and characters that move me somehow. There's something going on in their hearts, you know, that's important. And that's the case with, or I guess not. I mean, it doesn't have to always be heavy like that, but I'm doing Salem's Lot right now. This is my fourth Stephen King movie. But I play a character who's funny, which is another thing that I didn't get a chance to do a lot of in my early career in film. I did it all the time in New York. Being funny was part of it's in my DNA. I did stand-up comedy back in Buffalo in high school. So when I get a chance to do it, I I love to do it. And this character in Salem's Lot is in some ways he's almost the comic relief in the story. It's a little bit like Haywood in Shawshank. You know, you laugh at him because he's so not bright. I look for that. You know, I look for there has to be something in the writing or something in the character that gets under my skin, that makes me smile or I guess occasionally I get drawn to characters that I can't figure out. There's no easy way there's no easy or automatic way to do this guy. I'm going to have to, it's going to be a challenge, you know, to find the heart of this person. And I'll occasionally take a job. The one with Karen Allen was a bit that way. When I started the movie, one of the things that drew me to it was that I couldn't figure out who this guy was. He was complex enough, you know. He wasn't sort of a cardboard character, and it goes, oh, I know. There have been a lot of those over the years where you say, I know. I know what they need. They want, you know.
You're like, oh, this is, I know what, yeah.
I know exactly what they want, and it's this, you know, and I do it, and I do it well, and, you know, it services the movie. But once in a while, you get offered something that's, you know, more organic than that, or more nuanced than that. And those are really fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Just it kind of stretches your skin, so to speak, and takes you maybe in a direction that you're not expecting to go. But then it balances out, like you said, with these other projects where they call you and say, okay, I know what we're going for here. This is definitely written for William Sadler, and we bring him on and he delivers amazingly, and then on to the next thing. So, but it's great though, because you do it so flawlessly. I feel watching, just kind of looking back at some of the things that you've done, it's like it makes sense as a viewer, but then we get used to that. But then I could see why it would be meaningful to you as an actor and just a human being to be able to get these roles that are so different than what you're used to getting, because it has to be refreshing too, in a way, because it's like, this is something that I've never maybe tackled before as an actor. And now I get the chance to do something different. And then people get to see a different side of you that they maybe haven't seen in something that you've done.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much the case. When I started out in Los Angeles, it was the very first things I did were like, in the movies anyway, were Project X. I Killed All the Chimps with Matthew Broderick watching. Hard to Kill. I was the evil guy, Senator Trent, who had murdered his family. Project Die Hard 2. Evil motherfucker.
yes.
You know, it was just like evil, 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 evil. And once they've seen that you can do something well, it's very easy for Hollywood to say, oh no, he's great at that. They're very comfortable pitching you, casting you in roles that they've already seen you play something like that. And then I did Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, as the Grim Reaper, who is funny. And it was a long auditioning process, because I'm sure they weren't sure, you know, can he be funny? Can he, you know, because they go by what they've seen before. But I wanted to do it because he was so funny, because I saw a way I could, you know, I could use my funny bone and be an amusing character and do a crazy Czechoslovakian accent that I stole when I was in the theater.
Wow. It's all great. One last question here. I know, again, you've been in this a lot, a long time, and a lot of people, I'm sure, have asked you for advice, but what is the best advice that you were ever given, William, in your career that sustained you early on, that kept you going and motivated to keep doing this?
I used to get angry. I used to get resentful and angry. There's so many times you get turned down and you feel like you don't get the job because you're too tall or you're too short or you don't have a name. We need a name. There's a million reasons. And then the process of auditioning is 90%, 99% no.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
To say the least.
And thank you. We'll call you. And you get, and I used to beat myself up over it. I used to get angry and frustrated and resentful. And I had an agent tell me one time, he said, this is a marathon. This is a long road. You can't go crazy over these things or you'll burn yourself out. And nobody likes to see an edgy, angry actor walk into an audition. And I realized, and he was absolutely right. I was taking things personally that I really didn't need to take personally. And it shifted my view of the whole auditioning process, that they're looking for someone who can help them. They really want you to be the one. They've been looking for weeks. They want you to be the one as bad as you want to be the one. They're not the enemy, and it was that was very useful, because I think I may have been losing jobs because I was coming in too edgy, into these rooms. But that was a piece of advice that I got once upon a time. Walter Hill, the first time I worked with Walter Hill, he was like, he didn't say much. I did this little Tales from the Crypt, the very first episode of Tales from the Crypt, and it kicked all of these doors open for me, because it was right up my alley. He's a bad guy, but he has a sense of humor, and he has these monologues right into the camera, these long, long speeches right into the camera. And my theater background just made that like, yeah, of course, but Walter, every once in a while, would drop a little pearl of advice about, it took me a while to learn the difference between acting on stage and acting in front of cameras, and the power of cameras, the serious, limitless power of a close-up, that there's a universe of things you can do, when you're up here.
Yeah. It's
than
unbelievable.
In a room with 1,100 people, you have to do it different. Anyway, yeah. Things you learn.
Yeah, very fascinating. I want to say thank you for your time. I know you're in the middle of production and life is quite busy for you. So I think, the overarching theme of this conversation is just persistence pays off, I think, in the long run. If you're persistent, you work hard, and you stay on course,
right?
It's a marathon, right? That's really what it comes down to.
I also would urge people to do theater. It's such a different animal, but it's an actor's medium. You work those muscles, say 8 hours a day in rehearsals, and then 8 times a week in performances. And the curtain goes up, and it's 2 hours of you and your friends creating something on the spot, live in front of people, with no one to say cut and no way to go back and do it over. And it just it creates muscles in an actor's body that will help enormously when you get to the movie set. And it's you know, 3 a.m. in the morning, and they still haven't gotten to your big scene where you break down because your brother died. And you better have, you have to be able to haul it up out of somewhere, you know? And I found that all of those years of theater gave me a toolkit. It's hard to describe, but movies and television are an editor's medium. It's the director's medium. You do your little tiny bit and leave, you know? And it's hard to get good at something that you do, you know, in 2 minutes pieces, and then walk away, and you don't, and you know, then they need you next week. You come in and do another little bit. It's hard to learn how to be good at anything if that's how you're practicing. So that's my only other advice to young actors is get some theater experience where you get to use all the muscles in an extended period of time.
I love it. William Sadler, thank you for your time and for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
That brings today's show to a close.
Goodly-do.
Thanks for stopping by. If you enjoyed the episode, feel free to share it with a friend and subscribe. It's absolutely free. The views and opinions of the guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
Autobots, roll out.
Go home.